Welcome, welcome back again for our fourth edition of Whitley Penn's Energy Executive Profile with Matt Gentry of Monadnock Resources. Now, this is officially, unofficially, the highest rated and most listened to energy accounting podcast in existence. I cannot support that with facts, but I'm pretty sure that's fairly confident that's correct.
That's impressive.
Yeah, that is impressive. I want everyone to reach out to me if they can prove that wrong. But until they can, I just want to say, everyone always asks, so why are you doing the podcast? Is it get people, more attention to Whitley Penn, this and that? And to be honest, it's a simple formula. I reach out to close friends in the industry, have a few drinks, we sit down and get to dive in and hear a little bit about them. There's a lot of great personalities in this industry and feel blessed to be around them. So today, I'm so excited to introduce Matt Gentry. Matt, give us a quick rundown of who you are and who you're with.
Matt Gentry, President and CEO of Monadnock Resources. We are a Kayne Anderson-backed portfolio company founded in 2015, focusing on the Northern Permian Basin on the Northwest Shelf. Background, born in North Carolina, raised in Mississippi, geologist by training. Been in the oil business since, went to grad school in 2000, broke out with Shell in 2003, and a business I love.
Man, I mean, you got to be excited, man. This is the first time we've been on location to someone's office. But let's tell the viewers why this office, out of any other office, makes sense to have a podcast.
Well, it used to be a TV recording studio, TV, and the office space we found right after our founding in 2015. I know it's not a visual podcast, but if you could vision it, all the rooms were cut up in the sound editing bays, visual editing bays. We kind of blew those out, but we kept kind of the core of the office where they kind of had, we had a bar area where they had a cooking show. We have a special floor for the heavy equipment, for the lights and the cameras. Very open office feel, but it is appropriate to have the podcast here.
And it's an interesting location. It's got to be one of the only offices I've been to where we're on the ground level. If you can picture this, if anyone's ever been in Dallas, Addison area, it's in Addison Circle. So literally it's almost like a retail area, and two doors down is a bar. You got some restaurants, and so it's a really cool spot, really unique, I think, for an energy company to be here.
Being on the ground floor adds a different element to it as well, especially when you're having meetings and the comings and goings of the pedestrians, the foot traffic outside the windows can add a lot of flavor to the meeting.
I'm sure. And this is the first time we've ever had two mics. So Whitley Penn goes guerrilla style on these podcasts. I'm sure you've seen some pictures. And, often I see other people with pictures of their podcasts and they have headphones on. And I don't know what all those fancy things do, but we got two mics here. And
it's an impressive setup.
It is. And we can take it anywhere at any time. So whoever wants to be on it, let us know. But, also there's one thing about this office. Every year for the last few years, you have co-hosted a poker tournament with me, and I appreciate that. That poker tournament supports Marches of Dimes, and we've raised, over $40,000 over the last few years. But, you are a poker guy, right? You really enjoy poker?
I enjoy it. I do enjoy it. I wish I were more of a poker guy, but I do enjoy it. It's a fun time and great personalities, people, and poker kind of lends itself to – it's a very conversational sport. You're sitting at a table with a bunch of guys. Sometimes you haven't met them. It's a great way to meet people and interact with people.
And, you don't have to be humble here, Matt. Tell us how good you are.
Fair. And I have placed a couple of times at the World Old Man's Poker Tournament. So, if half the time I've played, I've walked into the final table.
Wow. Look at that. Now, I know you got third that one year. What other you got?
I've got a third and I've got a fourth.
Okay. That's nice.
A chip leader one of the times going into the final table.
I'm sure you lost on a bad hand, right?
Yeah.
And so we always enjoy that. And just to let you know, this year, the wife and I committed to raising 50 grand for March of Dimes. So
that great.
Means we got to blow it out. We got a big one here.
We will.
And so, before we get into your background and everything else, tell us a little bit about, getting into the industry. I know you bounced around in geology and you had some interesting stops. What all of a sudden, can you remember that moment where you're like, I'm on the wrong side of this and I need to go oil or energy?
So graduated with an undergraduate degree in geology and worked 2 years as a hydrogeologist for the state of South Carolina in the solid waste division. if you're on the wrong side of anything, that's the side you don't want to be on. And so I'd watched enough reruns of Dallas to knew I wanted to be in oil and gas. So I applied to three grad schools, applied to A&M, applied to University of Texas and Colorado School of Mines. A&M just happened to give me more money than the other two. Went to A&M, loved A&M. Some of my best friends are from A&M, still in the industry, keep up with them all the time. But, you know, I knew I wanted to be in geology pretty early on. I was kind of changing from major to major. I was a history major, and I had to take a science with a lab. And I said, well, I'm going to take the easiest science I know of, rocks for jocks. I'll take that, you know, ease on through it, keep on with my history major. And really, it was just had a, one of those professors, very dynamic. It's a very visual science, and just loved those aspects of it. You know, the history of the earth. Took the next class, historical geology, and then that kind of led me to changing my major. And kind of knew I wanted to be a geologist. Now I didn't have any idea what branch of geology I wanted to study, but sitting on a solid waste facility in coastal South Carolina, I knew it wasn't that branch.
And so, you know, you make that shift, you get out of grad school, and your first big oil job is with Shell, right?
It was. So 2003, get out of grad school, take a job as exploration geologist, work in the Gulf of Mexico with Shell in New Orleans. So great time, single, just out of grad school, got a little money in your pocket, living in downtown New Orleans. Great time. And plus Shell has an awesome training program. I mean, so with Shell, one of the first things we did at Shell, so this is literally like the second or third week at Shell, we fly to Malaysia. And they drop us in the middle of a jungle. We do this amazing race type thing with teams in Shell. They're all brand new recruits into Shell. It's a kind of a key class at Shell. It's called EP00, Exploration Production 00.
Your first, so how many people are in this?
20 people from all over the world. From all over the world. So they drop you off in the jungles of Borneo in Malaysia. You do this amazing race type thing, and it's a 6-week training class. And so you do that. That's one of your first things at Shell. And then a year after that, they have EP180, which is kind of the capstone class for your first year at Shell. And that's over in The Hague. So with Shell, I was able to travel kind of the world those first 2 or 3 years doing their training program, which was just a great experience.
And so, you know, you're there for what, 3 years?
3 years. So in 05, Katrina hits New Orleans. Shell moves all the E&P folks to Houston. And at that point, kind of 3 years, you're kind of determining your path within Shell. And the path I wanted to take within Shell was expat. Sign me up. I'm ready to go. So I'd signed up, and they were going to send me to Libya.
Wow.
And I was all about it. Let's go. Tripoli, here we come. At that time, though, I drilled one well within Shell. In those first 3 years, I drilled one well in the shelf. On the Gulf of Mexico, and really wanted to learn more about the business side of it. And so I answered an ad in the Houston Geological Survey Bulletin for an exploration manager in Dallas. And it just happened to be a Yorktown-backed company called Camden Resources. And that kind of led me to my move to Dallas and into the kind of the smaller company setting.
Okay, so that had to be a little bit of culture shock. I mean, Shell's sending you to Malaysia to do, you know, escape the race,
yes.
Team building. And then you go to Camden, where I'm guessing they had a low head count and much different environment. I mean, what did you like or not like about that?
Certainly. I mean, you're trading kind of international training trips for a trip then was to Jim Wells County, you know, sitting a well in the Wilcox. But it's the kind of learning that I wanted to be exposed to. It was learning the business. Drill, you know, probably 20, 30 wells with Camden those first couple, you know, the first year and a half I was with Camden, and just learned so many more aspects of the business, things I wouldn't be exposed to at Shell.
And so, you know, how'd you like Dallas? I mean, I know you've been in Houston, New Orleans, you know, you're in Dallas now.
So I can say this, you know, I've lived in Dallas, Houston, San Antonio. I haven't lived in Austin, but San Antonio's bigger than Austin. It's close. I'm sure that'll piss off all the Austin folks. San Antonio is much bigger than your city. Might not be cooler, but it's still bigger. So we prefer Dallas, to be honest. You know, where I'm at in my life, yeah, New Orleans was great as a single guy. And Houston and San Antonio are both great towns. But for where I'm at in my life, wife, kid, career-wise, ability to travel outside, you know, from Dallas, you can get anywhere in the world from here. If we're going to go to Australia, I can hop on a direct flight to Sydney right now. So we really like Dallas.
I will say, I think having DFW Airport, now that we've moved to Houston, man, that's definitely nice, because I feel like we have a lot more connections, you know, now that we're in Houston, depending on where we're going. And so after Camden, you know, you go to Antares, is it?
After Camden, I go to Antares, which is a small public Australian company with all their assets at the time were onshore U.S.
Okay. Where in the U.S.?
The time, Gulf Coast primarily.
Okay.
So this is a good story. So one of our assets, this is in 2007-08 time frame. So one of the big projects we had, we were shooting a 40-50 square mile 3D survey in McMullen County. We're trying to image an Edwards Reef play.
Okay.
At the time, Pawnee Field, which was a pioneer field, they did horizontal Edwards wells for gas, essentially. And we were going to go drill one of these wells. So we drill our first well. At the time we're drilling our first well, PetroHawk announces the discovery well in the Eagle Ford play.
Oh, okay.
So wow. At the so time, we have 4,000 acres, you know, 50% working interest in this kind of small Edwards limestone play. So we quickly netted up our position over 25,000 acres, 75%. Working interest in 2009-2010 time frame. And so, you know, one of the things, I do a lot of lectures at Mississippi State, my alma mater. One of the things I tell them is you're going to be really lucky in your career at some point. It's how you capitalize on that luck and what you make of that luck that's really going to, you know, propel your career. And yeah, we were lucky in the sense that we had a small position, the Edwards, the play came to us. But to capitalize on that luck was to get that 25,000 acres, you know, drill a handful of wells, market the position. We sold it to Chesapeake in 2010 and exited the play. But that was kind of the capitalization of that luck.
And so, you know, you sell in 2010. Were you with the company through the wind down? And then were you like, okay, where am I going to go next?
And yes, and that was a process all on its own. In 2000, so we really start looking in 2011. And we search every basin. We look at every deal that's marketed. We came close to buying a non-op working interest in Habanero, which is a deep water Gulf of Mexico play. Maconda just happened. Everybody was running for the hills. Conoco was letting go of this interest for what we thought was a really compelling valuation. We actually met their bid, their ask. And Conoco then said, well, man, we're giving this thing away. We can't do it. And so we kept on looking and ended up actually in Howard County in the Permian Basin.
Okay, and then is it that with Forge or that's before?
That's still with Antares. Okay. So we developed that position at the time. Howard County, there was no horizontal wells in Howard County. The vertical Wolfberry was the play du jour in Howard County. There's the old La Mesa Highway that runs between Big Spring and La Mesa. That was the line of death. Anything east of there was just goat pasture.
Who owns that asset now? You know.
Yeah. Athlon sold it to Encana for $7
billion. Okay, so you were on the right track. You were on the right track. Not quite the capitalization of the Eagle Ford asset.
No. But so that was, you know, 2010, 2011, 2012. And then made the transition to an NCAP Pinebrook back team, Forge Energy, out of San Antonio.
Okay. So, you know, now the wife, you pulled her from, or did you meet her yet? Was she in New Orleans, Dallas, and now San Antonio?
I met her on the corner of Bourbon Street and Governor Nichols on New Year's Eve in 2008.
Wow, that's a story. And so, how old are you? How old was she?
I was in 2008, 34. Okay. She's 30.
And this is when you were already still living in
I was living in Dallas, but actually getting ready to move to Houston.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, that was a fun time. So that was our first date. Our second date, she went back to Chicago. We texted, messaged, and said, hey, you know, let's continue this. And so our second date was Mardi Gras in February.
Nice. So New Orleans, New Year's Eve, and then Mardi Gras in New Orleans for your first date.
First and second dates, yeah.
Man, that's hard to beat. And so then you convinced her to come with you to San Antonio?
So she was working in Chicago.
Okay.
She was an environmental geologist, actually. And so she asked to move to the Houston office. And they said, you can move to Houston as long as you make a six-month stop in New Orleans. So she actually moved from Chicago to New Orleans, did 6 months in New Orleans before moving to Houston. And then we lived together in Houston, went to San Antonio and got married.
Okay.
Yep.
And so you were with Forge for how many years?
I was at Forge from 2013 to 2015, a little over 2 years.
And so how did the whole Monadnock come to be? I mean, you're at Forge.
Yep.
They got, you know, a ton of capital. You got a good spot. You know, what made you say, you know what, I'm going to go do this myself?
Probably an opportunity that came up. I mean, at Forge at the time had a lot of assets in Andrews County on the Central Basin Platform, drilling horizontal San Andres wells. Great little wells. They wanted to continue to grow and felt the best place to do that, and rightfully so, was in the Delaware Basin. And so as they're kind of transitioning to the Delaware Basin, we saw a lot of opportunities still remaining on the Central Basin Platform in the Northwest Shelf. So myself and two other guys from Forge kind of spun out of Forge, formed Monadnock in 2015, made the pitch to Kane Anderson. Kane Anderson, you know, are a little bit different in the private equity circles. They have a technical guy sitting alongside a financial professional. So they're engineer finance guys paired. And it was a technical story to tell in the San Andres. And a lot of other private equity shops at the time didn't have the technical capabilities that we felt comfortable with. And so we were pitching the San Andres to some private equity backed groups. We were probably spending more face time with third party consultants than the private equity groups. And that relationship didn't really feel right to us. So Kane Anderson, Mike Hines, is on our board at Kane Anderson, Exxon engineer who had worked all the fields in Andrews County, Means, Fullerton, understood the concepts, the engineering, the ideas that we were presenting, and that's why we ultimately went with Kane Anderson.
And so do you, you know, because this is kind of where, you know, I got to meet you. Do you remember how we met?
I do. You had asked me to speak at a Whitley Penn panel.
Even before that, it was a cold call. I saw you guys get backed in some magazine, and I was like, okay, here's my chance. I need some audit and tax work. Let me call this Matt Gentry guy. And so I think I cold emailed you, and you already had someone lined up, and so I was a day late and a dollar short. But we still connected, and then you did do that panel with us. It was a great panel, and we've been friends ever since then. But to all those young, hungry accountants, always do the cold emails and calls. You never know where it's going to land. But, yeah, it's funny. It seems like just yesterday, but that's, what, 5 years now?
Four and a half.
And so today, Monadnock, give us a little rundown of, you know, where you've gone in those 4 years.
So, yeah, so we kind of came with Kane with a project in hand. Horizontal San Andres, primarily in Yoakum County and Cochran counties. The San Andres, kind of the hallmarks of San Andres, you're going to move a lot of fluid in the San Andres. And we're really good at it and do it very cheaply. Great little wells. I think the play itself probably got, everybody thought it was a resource play. No, it's a play that's still grounded in geology. You have to do your homework, get the areas that, once you find an area that works, you know, go drill it, go drill really economic wells. So we're kind of executing on that game plan in Yoakum and Cochran County, but now we're kind of looking to expand outside the Permian, actually. So we've, you know, one of the things that we've had to do, that private equity in general has had to do, is transition from, you know, a land-based group where you acquire 30, 40, 50,000 acres, fence post it, flip it, to we're an operating company now. And, you know, we've become an operating company through a lot of dollars that Kane's, you know, thrown our way. And so I think they want to take advantage of the fact that, hey, this is a group that operates, they operate well, they meet AFE, they have all the roles, disciplines in place. Let's take advantage of that, those dollars that we've sunk into Monadnock, and let them go operate elsewhere. And so we're actively looking now at deals outside the Permian.
That's great. And, you know, one thing I love is, you know, for those that have not met Matt, you're a pretty easygoing guy.
Fairly easygoing.
And I feel like, you know, you know, pretty funny guy, and when you get to it. But tell the viewers or the listeners how you all have named your wells.
So we have some Seinfeld aficionados amongst us. So all the wells have a Seinfeld name themed in Yoakum County. So our first well was the Yada Yada. We followed that up with the Del Boca Vista. And the Giddy Up.
Please tell me you have No Soup for You.
No Soup for You is actually being drilled next.
Oh my goodness.
It is.
Be a great well.
It is the
That's
next well.
Be a great well.
We think so. The one, so we had our leasehold position. We named a lot of blocks. The one block, you know, we never did drill the Jackie Childs, which, okay. You know, I love Jackie Childs, that character on the show.
Okay.
Never did drill that. We did drill the puffy shirt.
Oh, the puffy shirt.
And we had our analyst on Spud Day. He came to the office wearing a puffy shirt.
Oh, that's, so which is the top performer of these Seinfeld wells?
The best well that we've drilled to date, and it's probably, it is the, there's an episode where a Kenny Rogers chicken roasters is beside Kramer's apartment, has the big bright neon lights. So the chicken roaster is probably our best well today.
Nice. And so,
and there's one Kenny Rogers chicken roaster franchise still in North America. They're somewhere in California. And we had a non-operating partner that has a house near the Kenny Rogers chicken roaster. And he flew out Kenny Rogers chicken roaster's chicken on his jet to location.
What? First of all, that just shocks me. That's awesome. That's actually a restaurant. Like, I thought that was a
Kenny Rogers chicken roasters. Come on!
I had no idea that was legit. I thought that was all made up for Seinfeld.
No.
And so, what's in the other? Because I know you do it by county, right? So you have a different theme for each county.
Yeah, and Cochran County is bulls of the professional bull riding circuit.
Okay.
And the reason that came, they're just really cool names: locomotive breath, you know, stuff like that. Chicken on a chain.
So what's any ideas for the next county?
That's a great question. I don't know. We're open to suggestions, so please email,
write in suggestions.
The best suggestions will I tell you what, the best suggestion, we will name the first well in the new play after a listener recommendation.
Oh, I love that. Nathan.McAllen at Whitley Penn. We need those suggestions stat. Okay. Now that I think that's great, and I'm sure, you know, I remember being like a young accountant, doing work for Trek Resources or, many years ago, and wondering how did they come up with the names of these wells, and it's just completely random. So it's good to know.
It is,
which is excellent. Okay. So now on to recently, you've done something that I think pretty powerful, impactful. So you have a brother.
I did.
And
younger brother,
and you gave this man one of the greatest gifts ever. Tell what did you give him?
A hard time. I mean, I gave him my left kidney.
Left kidney. That's so amazing.
It is. It's something we've known about a while. We knew he was going to have a kidney. He had kidney cancer about 3 or 4 years ago, and because of that, started losing kidney function. We kind of squeezed out every little bit of kidney function we could before the transplant. And actually, we kind of planned it out for the last kind of, you know, 6-8 months ahead of that. We kind of picked a date that worked well with all of our schedules. Went in for the transplant. And actually, you know, I'd never undergone a major surgery, never broken an arm. I may have had 1 or 2 stitches. It was tough, but it wasn't as tough as you think it is.
Yeah, what was your recovery like?
So I was in the hospital for about a week, a little bit longer than normal, to be honest. I had a small complication, but got out of the hospital. I was out of work for about 3 weeks, and probably back at work, you know, 80% after 4 or 5 weeks. Actually, so the surgery was in mid-January, and NAEP was mid-February. And I went to NAEP walking the floor. That was a little too soon, to be honest. I wasn't on top of my game.
I'm guessing you weren't at Four Seasons late night at NAEP.
Not late night. I punched out pretty early. But about 3 or 4 months, so I was back at 100%. And so I get, you know, I'm on a list of people that are thinking about it. If any of these guys, your listeners here, are thinking about a donation, a kidney donation, happy to talk through it, talk about it, my experiences, and I've done that for other folks. It really was a positive experience just to see. My brother got out of the hospital before I did, and that's common. Kidney recipients, because they're used to feeling bad, their blood's not filtering the waste out of their body, they feel so much better that second that kidney goes in. So he's out of the hospital before I am, you know, waving, hey, see it, thanks. But no, it was a good thing.
So, I mean, that's, you know, obviously a big ask, and I can't imagine that, you know, how that you're worried about your brother, and then you're the one that can help. And, you know, was your wife worried? I mean, that's a big operation. Were people worried about how you'd react?
No, because, you know, I'm a very data-driven guy. You get all the data. You have really good doctors there. You have an advocate that's not part of the operating team that you can kind of ask anything to. Nothing gets back to any other doctor. It's kind of strictly between you two. You can call off the surgery at any time, and they make an excuse up if you want to, you know, not tell your family or whatever. You know, it just wasn't a match kind of thing. But after looking at all the data, the research, the hardest thing probably was if my daughter were to have an issue with her kidney down the road, I wouldn't be able to, you know, help her out there. But the odds of that happening are so low. But no, once you recognize it, get, you know, talk to my spouse, my wife. She was really supportive about it. We were kind of go from day one.
So how long do you get to hold that over your brother's head?
Like forever.
Yeah, that's
forever.
Right.
What do you get for a birthday? Nothing.
That's right. Yeah, that's my kid. So
the gift of life.
That's an amazing story, and I'm sure that was I remember kind of you didn't know when it was going to happen, and it kind of would come and go, and so you were kind of on call for quite a while.
Years.
And so I'm sure, was there a little relief once it was?
It was, absolutely. I mean, we were kind of, okay, let's get this thing over with. I mean, you're mentally already there. You just want the surgery to go well, and it did. Recovery went smoothly. So, I mean, yeah, we were ready to get it over with.
And so tell us about, now you also have a four-year-old daughter.
I do.
Ellery, sorry.
Yeah.
And tell us a little about Ellery.
The most precocious, mischievous four-year-old. Everybody says this about their kids, right? But I was on the fence about having kids. My wife was like, okay, one or two. I was like, zero or one. Compromise.
Now, how many are you? What are you? One of what?
Two. So
one
I have
two,
just me and my brother.
Wife?
Two as well.
Okay.
And so not big families. I could have been, you know, at the time I'd have said, look, if I had no kids, I'd have been happy. But having her... best thing ever happened to me.
Yeah, I also have a four-year-old, so I think we're kind of, you know, I think four is my favorite age.
Everybody says that. I can see why. It's so good.
They're just so happy, and they're so not influenced by the outside world, right? My seven-year-old already, you know, she takes ideas from other kids in her class, and all of a sudden she comes home, and one thing she thought was cool one day, now all of a sudden it's not cool, this and that. But a four-year-old, I mean, she was just like this body of you and your wife's ideas and everything. And so it's just fun and always happy and like brutally honest, which I think
it's
is
amazing.
A lot of fun.
It's amazing.
And like my wife brought home this weird purple foot thing that's decor for our house, and I'm not going to go in that, but it's interesting. And you know, my 7-year-old's like, oh, that's cool, mom. And 4-year-old's like, that's weird. Why do we have that? And like just drills her on it. I'm like, man, that's the honesty you like. And, you know, everything is just over the top. Like, you're the best daddy in the whole wide world and all that stuff.
They're excited to see. Every time I pull in the driveway, she's ready to see me. She runs to me, jumps in my arms. It's awesome.
Yeah, and the other day, she crawled in and she gets into bed every morning about 6:15. And she's my little alarm clock. And, you know, oh, hi, daddy. I love you. And then, you know, you're like, oh, what a sweet moment. And then she turns to you and she's like, yeah, but your breath smells like cheese and farts. And I'm like, man, that's, you know, the honesty, but
yes.
Like in such an exciting way is just a lot of fun with those four-year-olds. So I wish I could freeze her at that age, but I'd be curious to see what she turns into. Well, good. So, you know, now it's to the fun part. 20 questions.
This isn't the fun part?
Well, yeah, it's all fun. It's all
yes,
fun. It's
absolutely.
All fun. For sure. So now to the 20 questions. And maybe you'll be 18, 19. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see.
Okay. So name a pivotal moment that helped shape your life or your career. You know, I kind of say everyone has these certain moments that stick out. What was one certain moment?
You know, great question. Pivotal moment. You know... I mean, there's several. You can say meeting your spouse was certainly one.
A geologist meets a geologist.
On Bourbon Street.
In New Orleans, and neither of you lived there at the time, right?
No, we did not. No, we did not.
That's kind of...
So, I mean, that's pivotal. You know, getting in this industry, you know, knowing that I wanted to go into this industry is a pivotal moment.
But what you name that moment that you made that decision?
I remember one. I was doing an internship in Jackson, Mississippi. We were logging a well in the Black Warrior Basin, conventional target, Lewis Sandstone. And I was with our geologist, a guy named Jim Files. And this is pre-shell plays, where you actually backed a logging truck up to a vertical well, and you knew whether you hit a well or not by just looking at the logs right there on location. And when that log ran across our pay zone, and it was pay, the joy, relief, that's all these emotions were so raw and on the surface. It was just infectious and contagious. I mean, you just saw, you know, it's like hitting in a slot machine. It was just so real.
It's that wild cat in your blood.
Huh? It was, and I was hooked.
Yeah, I can see that. And that's, you know, it's funny. I think oil and gas and poker and all that just goes together, because it's that same kind of mentality of a little boom or bust, and I think it's a good mix.
There is, especially then. I mean, just with a conventional well, you just knew right then. It wasn't, you know, wait for the frack design flow back. It was, man, I just made a well.
So what superhero power would you have and why?
Superhero power, you know, invisibility would be, I think, the ability to be invisible, I think, would be.
I'm with you on that one. I think that's mine. I don't know why.
There's so much. The options are limitless. Yeah. I mean, you can do anything.
Do anything.
You can be anywhere.
That's right.
You can listen to anything. The knowledge that you could gain by being invisible.
Exactly. Okay. Something non-work related that you are most proud of.
Most proud of my daughter.
Awesome.
Easily.
And is she look more like you or your wife?
You know, at first she looked a lot more like me. People would come over to the house, oh my God, it's a Matt clone.
You know, well, they say in the beginning, I don't know if it's true, that they're supposed to look like their dad because it helps them bond.
That's what I've heard as well.
But mine both still, I think, look more like me. But hopefully one day they turn the corner.
I think she's transitioning more towards my wife, which is a good thing.
Okay, so what's your best and worst personality trait?
I'm impatient.
Impatient?
Impatient, certainly the worst. Okay. If things aren't happening now, and ask anybody around this office, and they'll say that.
I bet your wife would
oh, get, God, yes.
Sees that too. Right?
Yes. Best, I'm very logical, very detailed.
Slow to anger? I don't know if I've ever seen
slow to anger. I've probably been angry just kind of on one hand. I mean, the times I've been really angry, especially in this business, I you have to do something really, really, really bad or just not use a brain for me to get, you know, drop tools, leave location, kind of angry.
Yeah, I could say, I mean, that's what, I don't know if I've ever seen you angry or even can imagine it, but I'm sure it'd be interesting. So what books and podcasts are you listening to these days?
Books, Blake Crouch, I love Blake Crouch books. He's written Dark Matter, Recursion, highly recommend those. They're kind of science fiction-y. If you're familiar with Andy Weir, he wrote The Martian, very technically detailed book, that kind of mold. Podcasts, I like The Joe Rogan Experience. I mean, who doesn't like Joe Rogan, right?
See, I've never listened to that one. I'm more of a Dax Shepard armchair.
You got to listen to Joe Rogan, man.
Joe Rogan's good. That's the one where Elon Musk
smoked weed on there. Yeah.
On the podcast, right?
And he just had Snowden on. He's getting some big names now. Yeah.
How did he have Snowden? Did he go to
Snowden? So, no, and he didn't. So, Snowden, you know, Snowden, his line in the interview is he's more like a house cat now. He just sits in Russia and does his thing.
Interesting. Okay, so what TV or movies are you binging these days?
I tell you what I'm looking forward to binging is the last season of Homeland.
Okay.
Which will be out soon. The Marvelous Miss Maisel.
I never watched
it. It's good. It's solid.
Did you do Fleabag?
We started Fleabag. It's we like that. That is good. Mindhunter. Really like that.
Okay, I haven't done that one.
Mindhunter's awesome.
No reality love shows? Literally, this is the fourth in the series, and everyone has admitted to watching The Bachelor.
No, my wife turns on The Bachelor, The Voice, and I'm out.
Okay, I'm with you on that one.
I'm out.
That does not come on in our house at all. There is a new Watchmen on HBO, Watchmen.
Haven't watched it.
It's pretty good. Highly recommend it.
Succession, Billions. Now I love Billions.
Okay.
Showtime.
We've done Billions. We're going to start Succession, but I feel like that's a big commitment.
Yeah, it is.
A lot of seasons there. If you weren't energy, what would you be doing?
I'd be an architect.
Architect.
Absolutely. Okay. No doubt. You know, geologists are very spatial thinkers, can think abstractly like that, and I think there's a lot of similarities between geology and architecture.
Are you a very like to-do list oriented person? Like you're always making to-do
I like list? A list. Yeah. Okay. Who doesn't like a good list? There's something therapeutic about checking off something on a list.
Man, my wife would just love to hear you say that. That's all she does.
You know, I'd rather have some of the things like around the honey-do list, you know, around the home. I just want that all to be conducted through texts or a whiteboard or something. I don't want to physically hear that I have to do something, but if she sends it in an email or a text, I'm more, you know, I'll do it.
So that's good to know, right? So if you want Matt to do something, vocally is not the way.
No, I communicate better through text and emails, actually.
Okay.
You take a certain level of emotion out of it. It's easier to tell someone to go pound sand in a text.
You're like, not today, not today. Okay, other than people in your family, name one person or the person you talk with the most.
Not in my family. Huh?
Either through text, email, or call.
Not work. Work colleagues, especially operationally. When you're running an operating company, I talk to him a lot.
You guys texting all day, day and night?
Day and night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if there's a well coming on.
A well, if you're drilling a well, you're completing a well. It's, you know, are we screened out on stage 17? What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay, let me wake up.
And how often do you guys go on site and go out there and check on things?
Pretty regularly. We have someone on location, during all completions. And I'll go to half of them.
Biggest regret?
Biggest regret. I love geology and love oil and gas. And outside of being the architect, the geology path could have easily gone volcanology.
What is volcanology?
Study of volcanoes. So I went to the University of Hawaii for a while, worked for the Center for the Study of Active Volcanoes, and volcano monitoring is just an awesome science. One, you're very exotic locales around the world. It's always, you know, volcanoes usually are associated with, you know, mountains or beaches. They're usually in impoverished areas, and you're really making a big impact on those local communities by doing eruption warning type studies.
Well, this is the capitalist in me. How do you make money in that?
Yeah, I don't think you do. Grants.
Grants and federal funding. Okay, if time wasn't an issue and you could master anything, what would it be?
Well, if time is not an issue, time travel.
Well, looking for, I don't know, maybe guitar or something. Oh, no, I'll take time travel. That's how deep you go. Time travel, I like it.
If time weren't an issue, well, shit, if it's not an issue, let's really take it to the extreme. You're right. It'd be a musical instrument, though. I'd love to pick up, absolutely.
Are you musical at all? Anyone in your family?
I love music, but I'm not musical.
Man, I'm not musical at all. I don't think anyone in my family is either.
Golf, my golf game get a lot better.
Terrible golf, too.
Just talking about time.
okay, so if you're in death row, what's your final meal?
It's final meal. It is likely a ribeye, stuffed baked potato, that type of thing. Steak and potato guy.
What's your favorite steak joint then?
Oh my goodness. In Dallas, I'm going to go with either Town Hearth in the Design District or Albernaise.
Better than the original Bob's?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. I don't know if I agree there. Most interesting location you've traveled to?
Oh, goodness. Iceland? Been to Iceland a couple times, yeah.
Did you see, what is it, the Northern Lights?
No. So when I was at Shell's travel policy, so I went to The Hague quite a bit with Shell, but their travel policy was, here's the price it costs to get from New Orleans to The Hague, X number of dollars, you book your own way how you want to get there. And Air Iceland would have flights out of Logan to Amsterdam, with a free 3-day layover in Reykjavik. And so that was my preferred route.
So I'm just here in Malaysia, Iceland, and you drilled one well. I don't know if they got much return on their investment with Matt Gentry.
They did not. So this is why Shell always hosts alumni receptions at NAEP, at AAPG. They try to lure you back in.
Ah, okay, okay. Well, but I mean, the energy industry as a whole definitely got a return, but I don't know, Shell.
No, they did not.
So one thing Matt would splurge on.
What would I splurge on?
Are you thrifty?
I am fairly. If I had to splurge, I mean, the obvious answer is a jet. I mean, I would live pretty miserly, but if I had a jet,
Yeah, I mean, that's like
travel today is just so.
As an accountant, I can't think of that level of wealth. But I would love for you to have your ex sit and then sit passenger.
I mean, just the hassle of traveling today is they just made it so taxing that, yeah, a jet.
Side story, I've only been on a private jet twice, and match entry is the reason for one of those. So I appreciate that.
Glad to accommodate.
Him and Chuck Yates, thank you very much. It was enjoyable. So favorite movie quote, or one that you quote the most?
Movie quote, Tom, your Huckleberry?
Oh, nice. I like it. I think mine would be like, help me help you. But, you know, that one doesn't even transition. Like, we had this question with Kendall in our marketing group the other day. You know, that movie came out in 95. So half the people I work with who are under the age of 30 have no idea when I say that.
Interesting movie. Here's an interesting movie trivia I learned the other day. When Wilford Brimley filmed Cocoon,
mm-hmm.
he was younger than Tom Cruise when he filmed the last what's the series Tom Cruise does?
Oh, Mission Impossible?
Yes.
Wow.
Tom Cruise is older than Wilford Brimley when he filmed Cocoon.
Cocoon, that's a throwback. These are classics. Write them down. Go watch them. What is one thing everyone should experience at least once in their life?
Experience once in their life. Yeah, maybe I should have gotten these questions before.
I know.
These are listen to all the podcasts, right, you know, thinking I'm writing down the list of potential questions. Experience once in their life.
We'll jump to this other one.
I would like to experience a hole in one. You know, I do like golf. Okay. I love golf. Don't play nearly as much as I would like to, but I've never made a hole in one.
So my dad has played all his life. It took him, I think he was in his 50s. So, you know, you may be close. Keep on swinging. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard though. You got a 4-year-old at home.
Yes, it's tough. It's hard. The experience, a great experience that, from an oil and gas perspective, is bringing in a big well. There's nothing like that. I mean, especially with now the real time data, the telemetry you have on these wells now to see a big well come in. Awesome.
And you're always chasing that best well, right?
Yes. Being at the final table of the World Old Man's Poker.
I can say, man, I've been to that tournament.
You should experience
with you
it once.
I feel like that'd be a pretty cool feeling. I don't know if that's top of the list, but that's got to be a good feeling because there's a lot of good poker players in there, and
it's
you're
fun.
Against people in the industry, and you know, sitting across and bluffing somebody that you may have be on the other side of a deal. That's kind of fun. If you could live in any city in the world, what would it be?
Any city in the world. You know, it would be an energy town. You know, loving the industry so much. You know, I hate to say I want to live in Dallas. I mean, Dallas for me, though, in the energy industry, it's very differentiated from Houston. I think Dallas has a lot more smaller companies, and it's a tighter knit community in Dallas. So of all the energy cities that you could possibly live in, Dallas, anywhere in the world, somewhere where it's a little cooler in the summer, though. Man, Dallas just gets brutally hot here. So my wife's from Chicago. Love the suburbs of Chicago. Would love to live there at some point.
I agree. I think Dallas is the really cool thing about energy in Dallas, it's like, you know, I think the Dallas Petroleum Co. is kind of perfect, kind of just micro example of it, that, you know, you go there and everyone's kind of involved and in the business, and it's kind of, you know, an important place to be and fun place to go, and they have great events, and you know, you're going to see these certain people there, and it's
right.
a lot of fun. It's a community. You know, Houston's so different. It's just, it's massive and it's everywhere, but there's no...
A lot larger companies are based in Houston.
Exactly.
So I think, you know, the camaraderie at, you know, you're not getting a bunch of Shell guys, a bunch of Exxon guys, and, you know, it just doesn't seem like it's as tight-knit.
That's right. And I, you know, it's fun, been fun for me to be in both and kind of feel like I'm a little connected to the two, because there's a lot of great people in the industry for sure. So what are you too old for but still enjoy? Mine's staying up late. I don't know why. I still love to stay up late, but every
my drinking game's gone south too.
It has.
I don't know if I'll blame it a little bit on the kidney, but I mean, used to back in the day. I mean, like, yeah, I could stay up late. I could, you know, pound 12 beers and nothing to it. Now, I mean, it takes me 2 or 3 days to recover.
I think that's also a kid thing, too. Once you know, you got to wake up the next morning.
Water skiing, you know, growing up, I'd water skied all the time. I just, anything that it's high impact, the knees, No, I'm done. Running, no.
Running, no running.
Okay. Oh, God, no, I hate running.
Any unusual habits?
Oh, I wouldn't say so. No, no unusual habits.
All right.
Not that I'm going to say here.
Clean living. Okay, who should we have on next?
You know, I'm going to say you need an equity provider.
I agree. I don't know. You know, I need an equity provider for sure.
You know, Chuck Yates, I think, would make an awesome guest.
I think Chuck would be amazing.
Chuck's on my board. I'd love to, you know, and I think he'd have a lot of insights. I think just, you know, a different insight would be warranted. So I'm going to say Chuck. We'll see if we make that happen.
Yeah, you make the connection. I met Chuck a few times, but he probably barely remembers me. But super nice guy. Obviously, a personality bigger than life and just a lot of fun. So I think it'd be a lot of fun if you do it. But yeah, we'll see.
Perfect.
Awesome. Well, Matt, lovely as always. I appreciate it. And you know, to our listeners, if you have any questions, comments, please email us, let us know. Thanks.